Good afternoon. Welcome to Line One, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media here in Anchorage, Alaska. I'm your co-host, Dr. Thad Woodard. The death rate from colorectal cancer has been dropping in both men and women for the last several decades. There are a number of likely reasons for this. One is that colorectal polyps that can develop into cancers are now being found more often by screening and removed before they develop into cancers, and that cancers are also being found earlier due to screening and are therefore easier to treat. In addition, the treatment of colorectal cancer has improved over the last few decades. As a result, it's now said that there are over a million survivors of colorectal cancer in the United States. This is one of the great advances in health and one of the reasons we are all living a little bit longer. This program is designed to help us understand what we need to know about preventing colorectal cancer and to improve the efforts to increase screening and improve the screening. None of us here today are experts on treatment, so I'd like to encourage people not to make calls about that if you possibly can. To help us with this are our guests, Larry Holman. Larry is a family and marriage counselor here in Anchorage, and he's a 13-year survivor of stage 3 rectal cancer. Also in the studio with me is Dr. Tom Mego. He's a pathologist for 20 years and the currently medical director of the Cancer Center at Providence Hospital. He received his medical degree from the University of Pittsburgh School of Medicine. Welcome to both of you. Nice to have you both here. Yeah, Larry, it's particularly nice to have you coming back again and doing this again. So I would like to start the program with hearing your story about colorectal cancer, and maybe we can all understand why you're so interested in helping people try to prevent this problem.
Yeah, I'd be glad to. In late 2003, I started developing constipation, and I'd never had any stomach troubles before. I was 55. That's illuminating. And I had never had a colon screening prior to that. So 55, you're recommended getting them at 50 if you don't have any relatives that have had colon cancer in the past. And so a couple weeks went by, and I thought, well, you know, this really is kind of bothersome. And so I called my doctor, and she said, have you had a colon screen? That was the first question. Hmm. I go, well, no. She said, well, schedule one tomorrow. And so I did. And so 5 years after, I probably should have had a colon screening. I had one, and they found a big tumor in my rectum, right at the end of my colon. And I was diagnosed with stage 3 and what they call N1 with a couple of lymph nodes infected. And December 23rd, as I recall, of 2003.
Merry Christmas.
Yeah, Merry Christmas. Well, it was a Merry Christmas because I had planned a trip to Mexico with my wife, and I was going to meet my son and his girlfriend there who had just graduated from college. Yeah. Well, needless to say, I didn't go to Mexico. They did. Mm-hmm. I didn't. I stayed home and started surgery and treatment pretty quickly. So, mm-hmm. I came today because had I gotten a screening at 50, probably would have saved myself a lot of trouble mm-hmm. and pain. So I had about 9 months of treatment. I have a bag that I carry around now. It's part of my surgery. They couldn't save the rectum, and I'm alive after 13 years and thankful for that. But boy, at 50, I should have had it. And you know, there are probably a couple reasons why I didn't. You know, I had been in and out of having a health insurance at that time. I was self-employed, and health insurance was about $1,400 a month. I was putting my son through college, so a lot of money was going there. And a month before I had this test, I actually got insurance, which mm-hmm. is pretty interesting. So I didn't have to pay for it out of pocket. But at 50, I really wasn't even aware that I was supposed to have a colon screening at that time. I'd, you know, I'd been to the doctor, but mostly when I'd get sick or something, not for regular screenings and stuff like that. So moral of the story is if you get screened.
Family history?
None.
Mm-hmm. You have brothers and sisters?
I have brothers and sisters. We've had lung cancer, breast cancer in our family, but no colon cancer.
Any other symptoms that you, in retrospect, may have been important, or that was it, just constipation?
That was it. Just constipation. Not, I mean, I, in fact, the summer before I got sick, I had added a second story to my house. I was out there every day working 4 days a week doing that, and I felt healthy as, you know, a horse, and felt great. So it was only about 2 or 3 weeks of pretty serious constipation. So, I mean, that was it.
Well, you look very healthy to me. You look healthier than I do looking across the speakers.
Well, I'm nearing 69, so I'm feeling pretty good.
Contemporary.
Yeah. Right.
Let me remind listeners, which I forgot to do at the beginning of this program, there's a couple of ways you can get in touch with us, and we want to encourage you to call and get any questions or confusions about prevention and particularly early diagnosis and screening of colorectal cancer answered. Our direct number here in Anchorage is 550-8433, 550-8433. We have a toll-free number, 1-888-353-5752. And our email address is line1@alaskapublic.org. We'll be here for the next hour, and you can also listen to the program later if you want to by going to our website at alaskapublic.org and find the link to Line 1, and you can get listen to today's program. We've already had an email come in, but it addresses an issue I want to handle later. We'll get to that, and the phone is beginning to light up. But I want to ask you, Dr. Mego, to tell us a little bit from a pathologist's standpoint, and this is kind of nice for me because you're the first pathologist I've had a chance to talk to. We hear from us guys out there on the other side trying to make the diagnosis.
They usually hide us in the basement. we don't see sunlight too often.
Right. How would you describe cancer? Let's just start with something generic and then particularly what colorectal cancer is.
All right. So cancer would be, you know, you've got a tumor growing and it's cancer. Usually you think of it as being malignant. And when you say malignant, you're talking about a tumor that's out of control the way it's growing. So it's either going to be invading locally or it's going to be spreading to other areas of the body, such as lymph nodes or lung or liver, etc. So colorectal cancer, the colon is part of the digestive tract. So if you start at the esophagus, go through the stomach, you hit the small bowel and then the large bowel, the colon would be the large bowel. And it's about 5 feet long. And then at the end of the colon is the rectum, you know, which is maybe 6 to 8 inches long. And that's where Larry's tumor was found. And anyway, the rectum connects the colon to the anus.
Mm-hmm. And you can have colorectal cancer. We're talking about is a cancer anywhere along that colon through the rectum?
Correct.
Is it more common in one particular area? Is that a good question, I guess, but it comes to my mind.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good question. I think most of the time it's left-sided and lower. That's why, although the right-sided ones, I think, are increasing in incidence. So in the past, you know, sometimes people would just do sigmoidoscopy, just looking at that lower left side of the colon as opposed to looking at the entire colon, doing a complete colonoscopy. I think now most people do complete colonoscopy, so they look at the entire colon.
I think of colon cancer as allowing us to, because of the screening, allowing us to see and understand the natural history of at least this kind of cancer very well. And here you need to correct me if I'm wrong, but what we now know is there are precancerous-like lesions in the intestines, the large intestine and rectum. that we call, excuse us, something came in on our radio, that's all right, our precancerous lesions that we call polyps, and so we can now watch those polyps, or we have a way to tell how long it takes polyps to develop into cancer. And then even more complexity is that not all polyps are really seem to be predisposed to cancer. Can you take us through that little story?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, there are different kinds of polyps. The ones we're mostly interested in are, you know, we call them adenomatous polyps or dysplastic polyps, dysplasia being a precursor to a cancer. The theory is that colon cancer is another cancer that's caused by genetic or molecular hits. And so the epithelium in the gut from top to bottom is constantly replacing itself. And as old cells die off and leave, the new cells replace them. And in that process of cell turnover, you've got, you know, potential for DNA errors to be made. So the thinking is that you have a genetic error. It leads to the production of a polyp. These genetic errors multiply as there's increased cell turnover. And if you give it enough time, some polyps will de-differentiate into a cancer. So does that happen all the time? No, probably less than 10% of polyps are ever going to develop into a cancer. And it does take time. The theory is that it takes 10 to 15 years. It can be shorter, though. Going from a normal colon to a early polyp can take 2 to 5 years, and then early polyp to advanced polyp, maybe another 2 to 5 years. So overall, probably 10 to 15 years, but it could be shorter.
So that has something to do with the typical recommendations of the timing between colonoscopies, I take it.
Yes, yes. So if you have a, you know, if you have a colonoscopy and there's no findings typically, and you have no increased risk factors like, you know, relatives with polyps or cancer, colon cancer, then typically they'll have you come back in 10 years.
So Larry was 55, and we could surmise that he may have had a adenomatous polyp beforehand. I'm assuming that all, maybe I'm wrong about that, all colon cancers are preceded by adenomatous
cancer. Yeah,
that's another question.
Yeah, that is. And yep, it's expected to probably greater than 95% arise from adenomatous polyps.
And it had been present for maybe as much as 10 years or longer.
Probably.
And maybe asymptomatic. One of the symptoms might be, I'm guessing, is bleeding from these adenomatous polyps, which otherwise would not be causing any pain.
Right. And but before that, I mean, Larry's point that his symptom was constipation. He did not have bleeding. And many times there aren't going to be symptoms and there's right. not going to be bleeding. So mm-hmm. that is why screening is so important, because you don't even know you have mm-hmm. this polyp or this early cancer. So screening is really important. Bleeding is maybe the easiest symptom to see. I mean, if you have blood in or on the stool, it doesn't need to be from a tumor, but it possibly could be, so that's a pretty good clue. If you are bleeding, that could lead to anemia, so that could be another thing. So if you have weakness or you're fatigued and that's been going on for a while and you have no explanation for it, you know, you might be anemic. And if you don't have a cause for anemia, probably the first thing the doctor's going to do is, you know, look to the bowel. So
often I would think hemorrhoids, rectal fissures, there's a number of reasons that are rarely benign, fairly benign, that will cause bleeding. And Larry, do you hear that story a lot when you talk to people about bowel cancer and you talk about bleeding as a symptom?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And people put it off?
Well, people put it off for a number of reasons. I mean, I think a good part of why they put off the screening is because they feel like it might be so invasive, you know, because you're dealing with private parts and it's not a comfortable procedure, particularly the preparation and whatnot. And particularly men, you know, they don't pay attention to their health. They think, well, you know, I'm impervious to this. I don't have to deal with this. And if I get symptoms, well, so be it. So it's It's kind of a head in the sand sort of approach that lots of men take, I think, to their health. Unless their wives get on them and say, hey, go get a colonoscopy or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to add another story. A friend of mine, he's a power lifter. He's my age. He's 52, but 5 years ago, he's 47. He has reason for having hemorrhoids and blood in the stool. But, you know, the doctor gives him the colonoscopy, 47-year-old guy, and he had a really bad villus adenomatous polyp, you know. So almost certainly that would have progressed over time. So there's a guy who got a colonoscopy screening for a different reason, but, you know.
We have a couple of questions about screens, and I think I should go ahead and I'm going to move on. I'm not going to spend some time on the incidents, so forth, if this is where the program wants to take us. There are a number of ways to screen, but let's start with just the overall national recommendations. And I want to stress over and over again, these are recommendations, guidelines. They're not rules. They're not written in sand. And every individual should be considered based on all their particular medical history. Insurance doesn't always necessarily go with that. But what are the recommendations right now, generally?
Well, the recommendations are to do a fecal occult blood stool test every year. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a sigmoidoscopy is recommended, and then, of course, the full colonoscopy. So. Mm-hmm.
All right.
Yeah, I would add, you know, for the average person at risk, you don't have the family history, you don't have an underlying genetic issue, you're not at high risk for colon cancer. The recommendation is, you know, start screening at age 50. 50 to 75 is when you should be screening. For Alaska Natives, I believe ANMC is starting their screening earlier at age 40 because they have the highest incidence in America. For colorectal cancer. There is starting to be some thought that if you take the whole USA and you're not just looking at Alaska Natives, but you're looking at all of us, the highest incidence, highest death rate is actually in African Americans. So there's some thought that, you know, they should start their screening at age 45.
And I'll add that if you have a history, family history, the recommendation is 45 also. So.
Yep.
What is the best current screening for colorectal cancer?
It is the screening test someone is willing to do. So, you know, there's...
So anything is better than nothing.
Yes, and right. Studies have shown that if you actually give people their options and they choose the option that fits them best, they are more likely to follow through. Uh-huh. So it really is like a conversation, you know, between the person and their doctor... or with somebody, and, you know, here's my options, this is what I think I can do, and that's what they should do.
So the fecal occult blood test will detect some bleeding, and so there would be false positives with that. There's lots of reasons, including eating a lot of meat. And so it's not very specific, but if it's negative, that should be reassuring for a year, is my understanding. And then every year it's a good idea to get a fecal occult blood.
Well, okay, so there's a couple different fecal occult blood tests now. One is, as you say, it's just looking for blood, and it can come from you or animal blood, i.e. meat. So, you know, if you're going to do that one, usually they try to have you restrict your diet and restrict medications. Now there's one that's almost as cheap, and it's also the same type of process, and it's the immunofecal occult blood test. And now you're adding a couple antibodies that are against human hemoglobin, which makes it more sensitive and specific than the old GWAIAC test or fecal occult blood test. Right. For them, that's about 80% sensitive because some tumors aren't bleeding. They're not eroded yet or causing blood loss. But they're about 95% specific. So pretty good. That means 5% of the time you'll have a positive and, you know, they'll do a colonoscopy and you won't find anything.
We started a program back when I got cancer at the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center, and the first part of the screening was the fecal occult blood stool test. And we gave out gift certificates for people, and boy, they came and they flocked in. I mean, like a $10 gift certificate, they came and got their test, and because at that time, The medical director at the health center said that 90% of the people that needed to be screened weren't screened in his clinic. So, and it was very effective. And then from that point, people who got screened positive were then moved on to do a colonoscopy. So,
but on these blood tests, at least as I remember reading the recommendations, and I want to make this clear to people, that's helpful, no question about it, but you need to be doing that a lot more frequently than a colonoscopy.
Yes, so, you know, the fecal occult blood tests are every year. So easier to do, you know, you can do it at home, you can mail it in, it can be mailed to you. But yes, it needs to be done every year.
So I'm trying to address, in a sense, with these questions of an email that I got, the first one today. The person writes in and says, AlaskaCare, which is the state's employee and retirement insurance program, won't pay for screening colonoscopy. I want to come back to that issue in a second. But is it probably an adequate screen, the writer asked, to use fecal or blood occult testing until Medicare will pay for my colonoscopy at age 65? If blood is found, would AlaskaCare probably pay for the diagnostic colonoscopy? You know, I don't know the answer to that. I would assume that they would. And I won't say anything about the insurance not paying for it, because I think that's a separate issue. But what do you think? Should this person, I don't have his exact age, but should he be doing at least a fecal occult blood until that's positive, or should he seek some way to get a colonoscopy done?
I would say, in his situation, it sounds like he should be doing the fecal occult blood test every year, because, you know, that's what he has put out there. Mm-hmm. Of course, colonoscopy is a gold standard, so if you can find a way to get that done.
Right.
And again, if you are clean, you know, you're clean, you probably don't have to go back for 10 years unless something else changes. Mm-hmm. So,
and to fully answer this question, it really also would be nice to know exactly what his age is, what symptoms he might be having, family history. Is it all those things can make a big difference. Again, trying to stress the importance of individualization, even though we have guidelines to help us.
So I will add that insurance will pay for those screenings if there's symptoms involved.
So the fact that he has blood probably means insurance will.
If he has blood, then they will pay for that. That's a different kind of test.
Yeah, now it becomes a diagnostic test.
That's a diagnostic test,
not a screening test.
That's right.
Yes, and that's a good point. With screening tests, there's screening tests and there's diagnostic tests. So you can get a screening colonoscopy, but if they find something, now it's a diagnostic.
Yeah.
All right, so that's important to know.
Yep.
Because insurance companies may treat them differently,
right,
or Medicare treats it differently.
Yeah.
So you now, as part of the Accountable Care Act, all private insurers are supposed to pay for screening with no deductible,
unless
no
they're grandfathered in, which I assume this insurance.
I don't know.
Thing must be,
but no copay, no deductible.
Yep.
But if your screening turns into a diagnostic, that's not necessarily true.
Right.
So you really should know if you're going to get a colonoscopy. You should probably make sure you understand if they have a finding. Okay, am I on the hook for a deductible or am I?
Yeah, they may do a screening colonoscopy. They find a polyp. They take the polyp out. Insurance is going to charge you a little bit. Or there may be some charges to you related to that procedure, not the screening. It's complex, unfortunately. That's,
you know, one of the goals of the colorectal cancer roundtable is to try to make those costs go away, you know. So, hopefully your screening turning into a diagnostic doesn't hit you with charges.
That's one of the biggest reasons I hear from people, at least in the past, not so much recently, that the cost of a screening is $2,500, $3,000. And, you know, that's not chump change for people. You're going to think, and if you don't have any symptoms, you think, well, you know, do I really need it?
Right.
So,
absolutely.
So it's problematic.
Yeah, let me make sure I understand that, because maybe I lost the train of thought. The screening would be covered under almost all insurances now, but there might be additional costs. But if you don't have insurance, I mean, even if you have a very high deductible, that screening should be covered.
Well, one of the problems is that there are many people who are insured through self-insured programs, and they're not regulated in the same way so they're not like in fact, the state is a self-insured program. It's not Aetna administers it, but they're not really an insurance company. It's self-insured. I think the school district is the same way. So they can make up their own rules to some extent, and I don't know what the extent of those rules are, but that's the problem.
All right. So the question, the important thing is, we're not trying to. We strongly encourage screening, but you need to check with insurance about how it's going to be covered. Your specific insurance as well.
That's right.
And then what happens if something is found? What is the obligation?
I know
there?
That the American Cancer Society in Anchorage has worked with the state for years now, trying to get them to change that provision that that it's not covered as a screening. It will be covered as a diagnostic, though. Mm-hmm. So if you have constipation, like I had, it would be covered. If you had blood in your stool, it would be covered, but not just as a regular screening. That's my understanding.
Here's another email. What's the best way? And Larry, you may be the best one of the three of us to answer this. What's the best way to set up a colonoscopy or a check for colorectal cancer if you don't have a general practitioner currently?
Well, there are several clinics, the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center for one. You could set it up to them. But I don't know if you can actually call the gastroenterologist yourself. I did have a general practitioner, so they helped me set it up and gave me the name of a gastroenterologist. But I'm not sure if they would take phone calls off the street, so to speak.
I think they do.
Yeah, I think they do too. But
and if you are looking to be screened with one of these fecal occult blood tests, there are drives every now and again. And I would call the either American Cancer Society in Anchorage or the Providence Cancer Center Patient Navigation Office, and they can get you a kit. They can take your information and mail it out to you.
Let's take a phone call as well here. Earl, you're on line one if you're still with us.
Yes, I'm here. Thank you. My mother got colon cancer at age 52. She had her colon removed and lived until 92. So with some parts of your body gone, you can live. Unfortunately, my brother at 60 had a sigmoidoscopy, which did not reveal the polyps, and he ended up, when they found it, at stage 4, and we lost him. I get mine checked regularly, but I understand that John Hopkins did some research on why polyps are sometimes missed during colonoscopies, and actually one of the doctors here in town, Dr. Diggity, participated in that study, and I believe he told me that they found if you went after you went in with the colonoscopy tube and you came out with the camera, as long as the research found that if they spent about 20 minutes doing that, coming out, the amount of polyps missed were very low.
Mm-hmm. I think you bring up a question we talked about beforehand, and we've talked about on this program before with bowel cancer, and that's the idea that if you have a colonoscopy and it's clean, that all is good. And there is a no perfect test. That's where I would start. And we need to always keep that in mind. But that there are variables. How clean the colon is, I think, is one of the big ones. The experience of the person doing it is another big one. And you're adding another variable, which if I knew, I'd forgotten, and that's the length of time spent looking. But that's also got some risks associated with it. So you balance how much time you're doing this. I would think the longer you're doing a colonoscopy, the more you're looking for potential side effects. And it's usually a pretty benign, pretty safe procedure. Either one of you guys have any other comments about this?
I just say that, sometimes I get these polyps from the GI guys, and you're like, man, how did they see that? It's so small or it's completely flat.
Yeah.
Usually you think of polyps, you think it's growing up out of the bowel wall, a nice pedunculated polyp, easy to grab. But, sometimes these things are just totally flat. And it just amazes me sometimes that they saw it.
How good they are.
How good they
and
are.
And they're not just sending you a lot of normal colon.
No, tissues. Sometimes you get vegetable matter, but most of the time it's really a polyp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I would add, that the prep is really important, and I've always taken it very seriously. I've had several colonoscopies now as a result of my cancer, and I take a lot of time to clean out my colon. It's really important to get a clean colon. So. And it's not a pleasant experience, but it's pretty crucial to the whole test.
I had mine done last year, and I will second that. It's not necessarily pleasant preparation, but the procedure itself is very easy.
Oh yeah,
I've had two, and I'd do it again because I think it's very important.
I've had four now. So.
I have no bad experiences. I just I don't like drinking the stuff
right.
That cleans you out. All right, where are we, Michael? I think it's you're up for a conversation. What's the question you have?
Yeah, I have an insurance question as well. I'm 58, never had a colonoscopy. I didn't have insurance until Obamacare. I don't have any symptoms. Very high deductible for Obamacare. So I'm wondering, I'll probably have to pay out of pocket, and is there any discounts for cash, or where would be the best place to go for that? And I guess that's my question.
Well, I think, if you're under, one of the plans under Obamacare, you should be covered for screening, completely free.
And without any symptoms?
Without any symptoms, just for a screening, because you're under a particular plan. Unlike what we were talking about a little earlier with some of the self-insured type plans, where they can make up the rules. Under Obamacare, the rule's pretty clear that certain cancer screenings are to be provided free of charge with no deductible and no copay. The question is if you find something, then what? So, whoever your plan's with, you probably give them a call. But, I think you should be okay for getting screened.
You can also go to the Anchorage Neighborhood Health Center, which is a community health center that would work with you in terms of sliding scale fees and things like that if your insurance is, if your deductible is really high. So that would be another option. Yeah.
And they would accept insurance, too. Obamacare.
That's right. Yes, they do.
Yeah, Mike, you sound like a perfect candidate to go get the colonoscopy.
Absolutely.
But absolutely double-check on everything. There's always the possibility. But screenings, we feel, should be covered without any cost to you.
Okay, great. Yeah, I've been waiting too long to do it, so it's time.
I would agree.
Thank you.
All right. Have a good day and good luck. You're listening to Line 1, Your Health Connection. Let me remind individuals or listeners again, our local number is 550-8433, 550-8433. We have an email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. We're going to take a very short one-minute break, and then we'll continue our discussion on preventing colorectal cancer with Larry Holman and Dr. Tom Mago.
You're listening to Line 1 from Alaska Public Media. The program repeats tonight at 8 p.m. on KSKA Anchorage and will not be taking phone calls. You can find Line 1 on iTunes or listen at alaskapublic.org.
This is Line 1, Your Health Connection from Alaska Public Media in Anchorage, Alaska, and I'm your co-host, Dr. Thad Woodard. Today we're discussing colorectal cancer screening and how this has really helped decrease the death rate from colorectal cancer in both men and women over the last several decades. This is a real true success story as early recognition and screening has decreased the death rate for colorectal cancer. We haven't talked about it, but the incidence, the new cases, are really decreasing as well, which are not completely explained by the screening procedures, but I think it's worth mentioning, and I'll leave it at there unless it comes up with other questioners. My guests today are family and marriage counselor Larry Holman, who is a 13-year survivor of stage 3 rectal cancer, and the pathologist here with me is Dr. Tom Migo. He's a pathologist at Providence Alaska Medical Center. He's also the medical director of the Cancer Center at Providence. Our contact information for calling and giving and asking us questions is the local number 550-8433, our email address line1@alaskapublic.org, and we also have a toll-free number 1-888-353-5752. And remember, if you're listening between 8 and 9 p.m. on Monday evening, you're listening to a taped rebroadcast, and we won't be here to answer your questions. But you can also go to alaskapublic.org and click the Line 1 link to listen to this program again or refer someone to that you would like to have listen to it. I'm going to take another question, and we're going to keep rolling with questions today. We seem to have quite a few of them. Here's an individual who is 37, his father had some problems with hemorrhoids. This person did a colonoscopy after reporting seeing some blood, pain, and swelling and constipation. The procedure showed a polyp, which they removed a month ago. This individual continues to still have same symptoms and wonders what the suggestion might be.
Well, you know, the symptoms for colon cancer, they're not specific. The bleeding, cramping, fullness, there can be other causes, irritable bowel syndrome being one of them. I'm hoping, the person who did your colonoscopy might have some ideas about the continued symptoms. It does seem to be unlikely that it's cancer-related.
I guess I would give you a second opinion and say, if you continue to have symptoms, I think it investigates another evaluation. It certainly seems a little unlikely it may not be cancer, but if you're still having problems, particularly if you're still having bleeding, I think it needs to be investigated. Larry? What would you say? You want a third opinion?
Well, this is a non-medical opinion,
right.
But if you got problems, you got to check it out.
Yeah, I think it's worth checking that out. Sounds like it's not likely to be a polyp that was missed, but that's possible, or something more severe. Okay, let's take another phone call. Let's do this one. Penny, you're on line one. What can we do for you?
Oh, hi. Okay, quickly, I'm 65, had a kidney transplant 6 years ago. It just barely snuck by on my colonoscopy requirement. I'd had it about 9 years before the transplant. The thing is the cleansing liquid is really so that we can get it done quickly and efficiently, but it's really toxic to the body and the kidney. I'm willing to give it a week if I could do a holistic version of lemon juice or whatever, but I don't know what would be accepted.
Right. So your question is, I don't like these preps. You're having some concern about toxicity. Is there another way to be prepped? And I'm going to say you need to talk to whoever's going to be doing this. Why go through all of this if it's not a reasonably good prep? And there are pretty much national standards on the way to prep for this. So that's my answer. What are you, any other comments?
You know, I don't know the answer, actually, so I can't comment on it.
Mike, I wonder what they do in Thailand, where they're a little bit more concerned about the whole body. But my kidney doctor, it's like no one's ever asked him that question. My general doctor, nobody I've asked. Wherever I can ask, and there's just no alternative
The preps are, they're variable. There's different ones, and we get the question about Miralax, which is basically over the counter and is used for many of these clinics, is the propylene glycol, and people worry about the toxicity of that, and Because of that question, just the other day, I reviewed all the evidence from the best reviewed stuff, and I can't find any significant worries. I don't know where the kidney worry. These things work because they're not absorbed into your body. They hold water in the intestine, similar to fiber, and you give enough of it, it causes you to have a lot of diarrhea and get rid of it. So they're certainly very safe, or they would not be used excessively. And they, if there was something safer and better, it would generally be being used. So I'm a little concerned or confused about the concern. I don't know where that comes from.
They want it done quickly. I mean, if there is a safer, better one, but it takes a week, I think a patient should be offered that option.
Yeah, I think if there was better one that worked for a week, then we'd probably be doing it. I'm not sure that's necessarily true.
And I think typically, you know, they're wanting you to not be eating while you're taking the prep. So, you know, you'd be, you know, going a week. That would be kind of hard to do. So, you know, you'd probably be eating while you're doing your prep, and that's probably what they're not wanting to have happen. If there's a better prep out there or prep that's good for you, that may be. I don't know.
Okay. Well, I'm just gonna find out what yogis do. I mean, must be something else. But
well,
let you know if I find out.
I think the issue is not what yogis do, is what is absolutely have good evidence to be safe and effective. And if yogis have got something that's safe and effective, they'll let the rest of us know about this. And that for them to know that, they got to be doing a bunch of studies like everybody else. So I don't want to. Nobody's got all the knowledge, but it just. One of the things medicine does is even though we've had our problems, is we're trying hard not to make our treatments worse than our problems. And so that's looked at very hard. The general rule is, what is it? Is it safe and effective? And is it safe and effective rather than doing nothing? And I'll do a preparation, even though I don't like it myself. But
yeah,
good luck with that, Penny.
Thank you.
All right. Let's take another caller. Don, you're on line one.
Yes, sir. Right up my alley. It's exactly what I was getting into the thing about was this preparation. I know some people who tried to cheat on it a while back, and very disappointing results all the way around for everybody concerned. When, you know, if you've got a doc, especially if you're willing to take time to sit down and talk with you, the first four or five colonoscopies I had. I was down in Arizona, and the guy was from Pakistan. He was real good. I mean, he was open with you. He'd come out and tell you, you know, if you want to, you know, food supplements help any. Yeah, take some more vitamin E, any particular kind. Get the white part from oranges and grapefruit, which is not always easy. If you got a heart condition, you take meds, don't eat grapefruit. But, anyway, up here, especially in Alaska, I have found the VA, and I'm a vet, is very good about this. I'm coming up on 76. I've had more than a half a dozen colonoscopies in the last 18, 20 years. And except for the first couple, I've come up clean on every single one of them. And the key that I've always found is, don't try to cheat. don't try to shortchange yourself on prep or anything else.
Yep.
Get with the doctor. Do it as accurately and as conscientiously as you can, and things will, pardon the pun, go smoothly.
Right. you're right.
It,
if you're going to.
Definitely something. I mean, I had polyps on the first couple colonoscopies I had, and he took them out. He also warned me. One of the reasons he was doing them as often as he was, and he was going slow and taking his time, is at that point he had informed me the most dangerous ones, the ones that were hardest to get and were likely to be the most serious, were the ones that were actually embedded into the wall rather than sticking out, protruding away from it. Those, at the time, he said he was very concerned about, because those were the kind that could really do a lot of harm further down the road. But, yeah, it's not in the pool. It doesn't matter whether you've been smoking for at all in your lifetime or anything else, whether it's in the family or not. If you suspect and you got trouble with it, as was pointed out earlier, especially any kind of blood in the bowel, when mine were first detected, you couldn't even see any blood in the bowel.
Right.
But it showed up in a just happened to be a test,
right,
screening.
Right.
And it showed up, and this is, you have blood in your stool. And I said, you're kidding.
Yeah.
And he said, no.
Yeah,
and
I
thought maybe if it was going to be somewhere, it would be coming out the other end where I dropped a kidney stone.
Right.
And they just come out and says, no, we want to do a thorough colonoscopy on you. I says, okay, go for it. Well, I came back up here to Alaska, and they did a couple on me. By that time, I wouldn't say cocky about it, but I was feeling pretty strongly for it. And I told them, I said, well, I had one or two done before without any meds. And as was pointed out earlier in your program, yes, it can be a little uncomfortable. But, and it may be a little more economical if you can go without the meds, especially if you drive a car afterwards. They are excellent up here, I have found. Providence, as well as a couple other places have done.
Don,
the key issue, of course, was, you know, don't go driving if you've got medications in your system that are likely at all to impair your judgment in driving.
Don, thanks.
Get somebody to help you.
Thanks.
I'll let you go and get off.
All right. Yeah, thanks. We got a couple more calls. I appreciate it, and I'm glad it's working well for you. It's what we like to hear.
So I'd just like to say Don raised some really good points. And one, don't cheat on the prep.
Right.
And then the other is, okay, let's say you're over the age of 75. You know, Don was 76. Are you still going to get screened? Well, that's kind of an individual. You know, everybody's different. Probably it depends on, you know, how many other comorbidities do you have? Did you have any findings in the past? Have you ever been screened in the past? So if you're over 75, that doesn't mean you don't need to be screened at all. It depends. It's an individual basis.
Yeah. So talking with your physician, even though the insurance may say we don't cover it, sometimes there's circumstances related to your particular problem that it may make it much easier for a physician to convince insurance companies to go ahead and cover that screening. Although we've already said most insurance companies now have to pay for the screen. It shouldn't cost you anything. It's the if there are incidental findings at the time that might be an issue to be aware of. All right, let's take another caller. Susan, you're on line one.
Hello, how are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm good now. I just wanted to use myself as a cautionary tale to people. In 2002, I began to notice occasional blood in my stool, and I had no job and no insurance, and so I knew I needed a colonoscopy, but I had no way to pay for it. And I kept thinking, well, I'll get a job. I'll get insurance. Well, years went by, and I never did. So then that brings us up to 2011. And in the meantime, things had gotten progressively worse. And all of a sudden, I had a rectal hemorrhage, which was not stopping. So I had to go to an ER. And after 6 hours in the ER, they got the hemorrhage under control, but they said, oh, by the way, you need a colonoscopy. Well, duh. So anyway, at that time, I discovered that there are places you can go and help you can get. If you cannot afford these tests, you can go to Providence and apply for charity care. You can go through Project Access. There are ways of dealing with these things so that you don't wind up with stage 3 colon cancer, which was what I did.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to have over a foot of my colon removed. I had to have chemotherapy, which very nearly killed me. And it took me years to recover. I am just darn lucky to be walking around today. And I'm just about 5 years out now, so I guess you could call me cured. But my point is, don't let lack of funding keep you from getting the test that you need to save your life.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that's, in a sense, the whole message we're trying to get across here today. This is a preventable cancer for all intents and purposes if screening is done. There's a national initiative to have 80% of individuals in the right risk factors screened by the next couple of years. And it can really make a big difference. I don't know. I think there's some percentages. I don't recall off the top of my head the percentage of individuals that should have been screened that have not been screened now. Does that ring a bell for anybody?
You know, one of the things I say is maybe one out of three people between the ages of 50 to 75 have not been screened. Mm-hmm. That actually seems high to me. That would say that 66, 67% of people who should be screened are getting screened. I suppose that's about right. It may be a little bit lower than that, I think.
And we have very good evidence that this being effective. We're seeing consistently, you know, year after year, a decrease in cancer death rates and the number of people now, as we said at the beginning of the program, who have had cancer and are alive and well is increasing. So this is a idea that needs to be promulgated and, you know, talked about, and that's part of the reason for the program. And Susan, it's really great to hear that you're doing so well. I'm sorry you had to go through so much, though.
She makes a very good point about having access to Anchorage Project Access will screen people if they're symptomatic. They won't do it just as a screening because that's not what they're designed to do. But there are other. If you're resourceful, you can find a way to get screened. So.
Right. So anyway, I could have saved myself a lot of trouble if I had gone in a lot earlier.
Well, I think the money issue is still a big concern, and that's part of the advantages of the Accountable Care Act is that, you know, we hear so much about problems with it, but there are some real distinct advantages and benefits from it. So, well, good luck with the future, Susan.
Thank you.
Here's an email that came in. We've kind of addressed it somewhat, but I want to address it again because I think it's important. The question is, what do we think of these tests for colon cancer screening, the guaiac-based fecal occult blood test and the fecal immunochemical test? Are these acceptable alternatives to colonoscopy? I'm 50 years old, no family history of colon cancer. I'm female.
Yeah, I mean, if you're willing to do it, absolutely. You know, the thing again is that, you know, it's an every year type kind of test. And the other thing is of those two, I would do the immuno test. It's more sensitive, more specific. It'll outperform the guaiac. And, you know, most people now are, you know, using that as opposed to the guaiac. And it's probably like a $20 test. I don't know, maybe a little bit more than that. There's another fecal-based test we haven't talked about. There's now a DNA-based test, and it's also pretty sensitive, pretty specific. Not as good as colonoscopy, but still pretty good. It's rather more expensive. It's about a $550 test, but most insurance companies are now covering that, and I know Medicare covers it. So just to know that it's out there.
What does that do that's different?
Well, now you're looking at DNA, you know. So now you're looking at tumor DNA. They also collect a sample from the stool looking for blood, too, so they're doing them both at the same time. I want to say, I'm blanking on the specificity on it. It's more sensitive. And the other thing about the DNA test is it's going to pick up those polyps as well. So the tumor doesn't necessarily, or the polyp doesn't necessarily need to be bleeding for it to be shedding cells, and therefore you're picking up the DNA in those cells.
Yeah, the information I have is that's recommended to be done every 3 years, so it's more sensitive and wouldn't have to be done as often, and you wouldn't need to do a colonoscopy necessarily. So I think it depends on individual preferences and how they want to approach that. Again, I think there's a lot of over-concern about the pain and discomfort of a colonoscopy that I think is probably overdone. The prep considerations, you really got to think about. I mean, I just, to me, it's that's the gold standard, and if I can do it, I think that's where I would go. But there are other ways to go about it. Somebody mentioned one thing I wanted to talk about is the fact that you can be bleeding into your intestinal tract and it's not obvious. And I don't think we've really said that so far. One of the callers mentioned it. And what the fecal occult blood test does is it picks up non-visible occult blood or blood as well. And it's not perfect, doesn't tell you where it's coming from, doesn't tell you why it's there. Just because you don't see obvious blood doesn't mean you're not having some bleeding in your intestinal tract. We've got a couple of minutes left, and I would like to just say that I'd like to end this program with, again, reinforcing from each of you what do you think the most important things that about colorectal cancer screening that we would like people to hear about. And, Larry, let me start with you.
Well, obviously, the lesson for me was I should have been screened earlier. But even after I was screened, you know, you don't want to avoid the screening because you're worried about getting cancer. You're going to save your life. I mean, the screening that I did literally saved my life. And cancer treatment was rough, and but I'm alive today as a result of that, and the quality of my life is good. So. If you get screened, if you're avoiding screening because you're afraid of the outcome, boy, I'll tell you, the outcome will be worse if you don't get screened. So get screened.
Yep.
Yeah, I would say, you know, colorectal cancer screening, it works. I mean, you know, there can be some debate over different screening programs, the benefits versus the negatives, but there's not much debate about colorectal cancer screening. It really does work. And as one caller, you know, mentioned, and again, another person I know, another friend, it'll save you so much pain and misery if you catch it early and you don't have to go through a bad surgery or the chemotherapy after or whatnot, or, you know, end up with a bag.
Colostomy.
Colostomy bag. So it's you really should do it. So
we had one question that came in a little late that we have about a minute left. I'm going to try to answer. I wanted to know if we could discuss Gardner's syndrome. It's a family history disease. So we've talked about general recommendations. Gardner's syndrome is not a common problem. I can't tell you a lot about it, but it's one of those that comes up on my noggin back in my brain cells that says that's an increased risk for colorectal cancer. And so if you have Gardner syndrome, then the recommendations are different and more common, I'm pretty sure.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, I don't know Gardner syndrome specifically. Let's say, you know, it's one of the inherited syndromes where you make an awful lot of polyps, which means you have a much greater risk of developing colorectal cancer. I couldn't tell you the exact lifetime risk. But let's say if it's familial adenomatous polyposis, another inherited syndrome, you're going to start screening those patients, you know, in their teen years, you know, 10 to 12 years old. So Gardner syndrome, probably similar. I don't know how early, but, you know, I'd expect in the 20s or 30s you'd be getting screened.
My thanks to today's guests, Larry Holman and Dr. Tom Mego. If you want to continue this discussion on prevention of colorectal cancer, you can join KSK on Facebook, where you can, and you can find that link on our website, alaskapublic.org. You'll also find our archives, and you can also leave your thoughts and suggestions at our email address, line1@alaskapublic.org. Next week, my co-host, Prentice Pemberton, is going to talk about something we've never talked about before, narcissism, and how do you know if your mate has narcissism? Next Monday, March 6th at 2 p.m., repeating that same evening at 8 p.m. Eric Bork was today's audio engineer, and Eric is also our web editor. I'm Dr. Thad Woodard. Have a great day.
Line 1 is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the host and participants and do not reflect the underwriters or KSKA. Learn more about Line 1 and listen online at alaskapublic.org. Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.